Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the BT Powerhouse podcast. I'm Thomas Bendit, the manager of BT Powerhouse, I guess. It is October 16th. Nice, crisp fall afternoon up in Michigan, at least. Excited. A lot of college football going on, but ready to keep the swing going into college basketball. We'll be talking about Ohio State today. Really interesting team. A lot of success under Thad Matta over the last few years. And to help break it down, we have Matt Brown from our sister brother site, Land Grant Holy Land. Matt, how you doing today?
Hey, Thomas. I thought I knew what it was like to be tired last season, but between having a toddler and Pac-12 football, like, I might be more energy drink than person at this point. But I'm properly caffeinated, and I think I'm awake at this point. But if I say anything that's incomprehensible gibberish, that's my excuse to begin with.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, we're doing the rare morning podcast here, but it'll be fun. It'll be fun. excited to talk about some Ohio State basketball. Big Ten Media Day yesterday. I know everybody likes to do the narratives, the storylines. What are your just general thoughts coming into this season for Ohio State?
It really is kind of a strange season because this team is so completely unknown. It's one of the more it's the most inexperienced team that I can off the top of my head remember at Ohio State since I've been watching. It's one of the more inexperienced teams I think in the country. There's no seniors. There's just one upperclassman. There's only a handful of sophomores, and Ohio State is bringing in between like their projected 9-10 man rotation. Like six of them are going to be people who have never played college basketball at Ohio State before. So on one hand, if you're an Ohio State fan, you're excited because a lot of the players have frustrated you over the past couple on. Almost everybody coming in is a 4-star recruit. This is the best recruiting class in the Big Ten. But on the other hand, it's all new, and most people haven't even watched tape of some of these new guys here. So the range of what could possibly happen is that more vast, I think, than in recent memory for Ohio State. So it's tough to know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting because usually, you know, when you see a guy like D'Angelo Russell leave and, you know, a lot of guys they've played a lot of minutes for Ohio State, they've contributed a lot, and, you know, they may not have been all Big Ten players, but, they've earned their keep in Columbus. And when you see all those, you know, numbers exiting, your first thought is, well, this could be a rough year. And then you see, you know, at least from my perspective, could this be a more talented team than last year?
Well, maybe on the entire aggregate. I mean, I don't think there's anybody on this team that's even 80% or 80% as good as D'Angelo Russell was. Yeah, he was one of the best players in college basketball. There's a reason he went so high in the lottery. There's a ton of potential, and I think that the front court already is probably more talented than it was last year. There are guys who have not played college basketball who I think, as of right now, are already more polished offensively than Trey McDonald and Amir were last season. Their ceiling might be higher, but I don't think they're going to reach that ceiling this year. But what they look like in March could be potentially a pretty dangerous team.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and should be an interesting season. So I guess let's dive into the roster here a little bit.
Sure.
Starting with the guards, how do you see kind of this backcourt shaking out? Obviously, D'Angelo Russell, excellent player, All Big Ten Freshman of the Year, All American. I don't know if anybody expected him to be that good last year, but obviously fantastic. He's gone to the NBA. Shannon Scott played a lot of minutes at Ohio State. I know seemed to be kind of some mixed thoughts on him, but he's also gone. How do you see the backcourt shaking out this year?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the interesting questions on this team because right now there's only one true point guard on this roster. That's A.J. Harris. He's the lowest regarded recruit of this class, but every report out of practice and from people who have seen him has been extremely complimentary. They say he's crazy fast, got a great motor, very, very aggressive. The problem is that he's 5'9". And he's listed as 165 pounds, and that might be like dripping wet after eating a cheeseburger. Like he's not a big guy. I think he's going to play a lot, but I don't necessarily know if he's going to be someone who's going to play like 30, 35 minutes a night as Ohio State's lead guard, especially because I think given the size of some of the front courts in this conference, he'll just get swallowed up. So the most likely scenario, I think, is you're going to see Jaquan Lyles. He's the crown jewel of this recruiting class and kind of the closest thing to a D'Angelo apparent, even though their styles aren't exactly similar. He's a bigger combo guard. I think he's going to start at point, and we'll see a lot of the ball handling duties there. And you're probably going to see redshirt sophomore Cam Williams, at least in the beginning of the season, start as the number two. He's one of the few guys that's an established player at all, meaning that he's played like one season. But he has some perimeter shooting ability and had really kind of grew his game a little bit last year. But so those two are, I think, who you're going to most likely see. AJ Harris is definitely going to be in that rotation. You're going to see him a lot. And then there's a couple of other options of people that they might kind of, you know, go big or small. They could bring in Mickey Mitchell, who's 6'7", as a ball handler, to go big. They might bring in Austin Grandstaff, who's 6'4", he's a true freshman. He's the sharpshooter of that class. He's the kind of guy who I think needs to work on his body a little bit more, will probably fall out of the rotation come Big Ten play, just because I don't know that he's able to get to the basket or has developed enough to be able to consistently get off his shot. During the kind of cupcake tour in November, I think you'll see him playing and see here what he can do. So there's a couple of different people they can throw in there in that group, and they can go big or they can go small, but it's almost completely new names. There's probably going to be some growing pains there.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement there. One thing I did kind of want to ask about, and trying not to get too off topic here. Obviously, Jaquan Lyles had a little bit of a relation to the Louisville NCAA investigation. Do you want to take a second to just talk about essentially what's going on with that? Because I know a lot of people are kind of unclear about it.
Yeah. So from the best of our understanding is that in this book from our Louisville escort friend, Lyle is mentioned by name as somebody who had received services. And, Lyle was originally a Louisville commit. He decommitted and went to Oregon and then wasn't academically eligible, went to prep school and ended up here at Ohio State. Ohio State's SID in the basketball department and the university have been very adamant that Lyle's NCAA eligibility is not at risk. He cooperated with the NCAA. I suspect that they kind of had an agreement where if he confirmed the allegations to the NCAA, they gave him immunity to try and get him to talk. That isn't confirmed, but I've seen Zag's blog tweet that, and that would make sense. But he's kind of one of the people that's going to be a principal voice in the bottom of whether the Louisville allegations are true. So I imagine he's not going to be the most popular person in Kentucky.
Yeah, that will probably definitely be true. I just wanted to clear that up. I know there, people see a headline and they kind of freak out, but all reports are that he will be playing this year and nothing should happen on his part. Moving on, I guess, to the wings. I know there's some overlap here, but Sam Thompson is out. Obviously the one of the Big Ten's best dunkers, one of the better defenders. How do you see the wing group shaping out this year?
Yeah, this is also going to be interesting because there's fewer new faces in this group, but that doesn't mean that there aren't question marks. Mark Loving is the sole upperclassman here, and he is going to need to play a really big role on this team. A former Ohio Mr. Basketball, and last season had a really great start to the year. He's able to show that he's able to do a reasonable athletic impression of Sam Thompson. Can't quite sky like he can, but almost nobody in college basketball could. And he's also showing to be one of the best three-point shooters in the entire Big Ten. For like the first two-thirds of the season, he was shooting nearly 50% from downtown from the corners, absolutely automatic. Then he gets suspended for two or three games, and when he comes back, was so bad that he fell out of the rotation. Right now, it seems that he's assuming a leadership role within this team, I believe, based on what we've been hearing out of practice, he's expected to start. Ohio State's going to need him to score, and they're going to need him to score beyond just catching and shooting on the perimeter. They're going to need him to get to the basket. They're going to need him to defend. And if he is playing like he did the last third of the season, I don't see. I mean, that really limits Ohio State's ceiling. From there, they're also going to need a big season from Gita Bates-Dia, who's a sophomore and had a couple of moments last year, fell out of the rotation a little bit during Big Ten play, hit some big shots in the tournament. He has great size. He has some shooting potential. It's hard to stay on the floor for a Thad Matta team that you can't defend consistently, and that was kind of his problem. But I think another year in the system is going to make him more of a rotation player. He's definitely going to play 15, 20 minutes a night. And one of the few guys I think has the potential to, like, drop 16 points a night if he's able to defend well enough. So he's going to be a big name. The other two, maybe Ohio State's single best player, Deshaun Tate, is kind of this really – he's like a Charles Barkley type. He's only 6'4", but he plays – with a power forward, you know, his back to the basket, down low. He's not really somebody who's shooting a bunch of threes or playing a perimeter-oriented game. And despite giving up 3, 4, 5 inches on people, he played really pretty well. He's an effective rebounder. He can kind of back his butt into people. He was the guy that was showing in the beginning kind of these kind of energy plays that really endeared him to Ohio State fans. And he's not really like a wing in the sense that he's kind of, you know, floating around the three-point line, but he's definitely going to be in the rotation. He might be Ohio State's best rebound. The last guy that you might see is Mickey Mitchell, who is 6'7", and kind of a point forward person. He really, in high school, he played like all five positions. He's someone who can bring the ball up for Ohio State. The question with him is really his health. He's kind of old for a freshman. I think he might be 19 already, maybe close to 20. He's had some back surgeries. We're not exactly sure what we're going to get athleticism-wise, but if he's healthy, he can defend four positions. And I would imagine that they're going to kind of test him out at the beginning of the year when Ohio State's beating people at 40. And if he's able to handle the physical grind, I would imagine that he's going to be kind of one of the freshmen that sneaks into this rotation and is able to do a couple of different things for Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the you talked about him for a little bit, but one of the bigger underwhelming performances for me last year is I was really high on Keita Bates-Diop. And, you know, I thought he was going to come in and just excel, you know, creating his own shot, hitting from outside. And I wouldn't say he had a bad freshman year. I mean, a lot of players, you know, they transition in and pick up after that. But, he's definitely underwhelmed for what I thought he was going to do. So it'll be interesting if he can develop into a quality starter there.
That's been kind of one of the rubs again, like that Ohio State fans have complained about Mata a little bit, is that player development hasn't been what they wanted it to be, and that's going to be a huge part of this season, because if the guys who are playing as redshirt freshmen do not take big steps up, if they're kind of already are what they are, this team will be bad. But there were definitely some big moments, I think, with Bates-Diop near the end of last season that gives some pause. Mostly, mm-hmm. He just wasn't staying on the court. Like he wasn't getting double. He only got double digits of minutes within Big Ten play like four times. Now that Thompson is you know not blocking his minutes anymore, now that they have to play him a little bit, I would expect him to be a little bit more efficient.
Yeah. With that, why don't we move over to the front court? I would say the area that's been a bit of a pain since Sullinger has left. Trey McDonald, yeah. Amir Williams kind of held down the fort last year. Both are gone. Seemed to be a lot of frustration. How do you see it shaking out? And are Ohio State fans happy about new face in the front court, I guess?
The Ohio State fans, I think, are very happy. I feel kind of bad, you know, saying this. Like, part of what we did at Land Grant, I think, an almost annual feature until the second half of last year was like, our Amir Williams is not as bad as you think. Somebody who actually was projected decently, if you look at kind of like the efficiency stats on defense. But it's because he came in as a McDonald's All-American. You know, that was kind of a reach. and he never really got better, and people perceived his effort to be poor. He was dogged more by fans and, quite frankly, a lot of beat writers, more than any Buckeye, I think it's B.J. Mullins. So that's been a little while, and they're all gone. We kind of knew what they were, and now that there's three new faces, and I think just by virtue of being new, that's going to endear themselves to the Ohio State fans, even though I expect some of the struggles to continue. Crown jewel of this group, person who I think is going to start but may not necessarily play the most minutes of the year, is Daniel Giddens, a guy from Georgia, one of the highest regarded big men of his class after having missed on a couple of guys the last cycle or two. Giddens, his offensive game by all indications is still very much developing. Like I'm not expecting Giddens to pop out and hit 12-foot jumpers or have this huge array of post moves, but he does have, his hands are improving. But what's the big catch about him is that he's already a good interior defender. And if Ohio State has somebody who can come in and disrupt shots and can kind of get in the face of some of these really strong big men that this conference has right now, and rebound at a greater efficiency clip than Amir and McDonald did last year, that's a big plus for Ohio State. Flanking him, you've got Trevor Thompson, who's nearly 7 foot. He was a transfer from Virginia Tech, sat out last year for those rules. Somebody who is not projected to be as good of a defender as Giddens, but might have the most established offensive game of not just any of the big men right now, but probably any of the big men that Ohio State has had for a couple of years. Maybe Evan Ravenel could hit a 12-footer, but not a lot of other guys that have been in Ohio State's rotation recently have. I would not be shocked if he ends up playing the most minutes over the course of the season, but they're definitely both going to play a lot, and it'll depend on matchup, situation, everything. Dave Bell's the third guy. He was somebody that I think a lot of Ohio State fans were surprised even got a scholarship offer. He wasn't really on a lot of Big Ten teams' radar. He seemed like he was going to be like a good get for a MAC team. Ohio State picks him up. He redshirts last year, and then every indication again out of camp was like, wow, he improved a lot. He got bigger. His feel for the game's gotten better. I don't think that he's going to be playing very much unless it's a lot of foul trouble. But the expectations for Bell as somebody who can do more than just give fouls, I think have raised a little bit. And if he's able to come in and just play 4 or 5 good minutes and stay out of trouble and spell the other guys and set screens and everything, I think that's a win.
Yeah, it should be the front court's going to be very interesting. I know, and I did want to ask one thing kind of, you talked about it a little bit, but generally I think the general perspective, we know college basketball especially keeps getting younger every year. I mean, it's no longer, freshmen of today are not like the freshmen of 20 years ago. They're expected to come in and play. But the front court seems like an area where age really does kind of make a difference, unless you're, one of the five-star Kentucky-type, players, mega recruits. How do you think the youth is going to play into Ohio State, particularly up front this year?
Well, I think there's a greater learning curve if you are a big man than if you're a guard necessarily, especially since a lot of the prospects that come in have not been playing basketball as long or in high school because of their size. They're used in a different way than they might in college. There's footwork changes. Your fundamentals change here. It takes a little bit longer to learn that position. I think especially offensively, you might be able to come in just by being really tall and athletic and smart to be able to change the game with defense and everything. So, I'm not expecting a developed post presence offensively for Ohio State this season. In terms of just youth in general, Ohio State's schedule's hard. The Big Ten is really hard. You might be seventh or eighth in this league and still be a tournament caliber team. And there's really only probably one team that's going to be hot garbage this entire season. even Penn State or Nebraska are going to be teams that are kind of feisty. So learning to defend the way that motto teams want you to, learning to keep an even keel emotionally throughout the kind of slog that this season is, those are things that are difficult and that takes some time. And, learning the offense, learning how to not play hero ball. And so that means that, there are going to be nights when Ohio State reminds you that, everybody is 18. And then it takes some time for them to learn that, yes, you can lose by 12 to Northwestern and still have a productive season if you can pull yourselves up emotionally to handle that. So I'm thinking that we're going to see a couple of nights or two where Ohio State loses to a team that is less talented because of poor execution or because of poor team emotions. And then they're also probably going to beat at least one team that they have no business beating for that same reason. And I think if the team that we're seeing in late February, early March, is substantially better than the one that we see in December, doesn't necessarily mean a gaudy Big Ten finish. I would consider that a success. And I think other Ohio State fans, too, because I think it's really next season when everybody from this team comes back and Funderburk comes in and maybe Kobe Simmons, then you look at, like, that's when Ohio State's going to make a move again.
Hmm. Yeah, and kind of moving back, I guess, towards the newcomers here. I know you've talked about pretty much them all, I think, for at least a little bit. But what should fans expect out of this recruiting class both this year, next year? And if you want to take a second to just talk about the new additions, and I know there's also a transfer. I believe there's just one this year for Ohio State.
Yeah. Thompson's the transfer, the big man that came in here from Virginia Tech. The good news is that I think every single one of the players that are coming in they're very talented. They are people who should be able to contribute to Ohio State basketball, and all of them eventually should be quality rotation players. I'm not sure if any of them, other than maybe Lyle, and Giddens perhaps have the potential to be kind of transformational players for Ohio State. But there are people that are coming in that are going to plug a lot of the roster holes here that Ohio State has seen. The question is going to be, where do the points come from? Ohio State the past couple of seasons has kind of, not by design, but just hasn't sort of happened, had one dominant scorer and a bunch of people that kind of like missed three-pointers. And I don't think there's a guy on this team, if anybody flies, but I don't know if it is, that can play hero ball. So there, Ohio State is going to have to share the basketball. They're going to have to find multiple people who can score 12 to 14 points because one guy is not going to be able to bail their ass out. I'm pretty optimistic about the future of Ohio State basketball. I like some of the guys that are coming in, even after this class, especially if they're able to get point guard Kobe Simmons so they can have some depth at that position. I look at this as a transformational year, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be bad. Just that, like, I don't think this is a team that's competing for the Big Ten championship, but the growing pains that we see here are going to be building to something, and that's going to be a lot more emotionally satisfying than watching last year and going, well, man, I kind of know what Shannon Scott is at this point, and watching him struggle in January, I know it's not going to make things different in April, and that's what's frustrating. I don't think we're going to have that this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It seems like there's kind of a split that, like, half the Big Ten teams, you kind of know what they're going to be, and then another half, there's a ton of talent. It's just, when it comes together, how it works out. And I agree. I think next year this roster is going to be really loaded, especially if they can land Simmons, who, for those who are wondering who we're talking about, mega recruit. I mean, Kentucky's recruiting him like no other, so you kind of get an idea of what type of prospect he is. But yeah, there's a lot of talent on this roster. It's going to be very young. But this could be we'll see if you agree. Do you think this could kind of be that core, the recruiting class, where 2-3 years later you look back and we're like, wow, this class really led to some great things?
I think it has to. And mm-hmm. this is the danger that happens the way that Ohio State recruiting is kind of set up, where they're bringing in a really big class, and then you have two, that ties up a lot of your scholarships, and then you're only able to add one or two guys the next couple of years until this one, either kind of transfers out or graduates. So if you're going to do that, then you have to nail that class. Ohio State has done that before, and one of the reasons that they struggled the last two and a half seasons is that their big class gave them a couple of role players. And, Sam Thompson and Shannon Scott are good college basketball players, but they were mm-hmm. they needed to be a little bit more. And then they whiffed with their front court recruiting, and they didn't have scholarships to rectify that. If this class, if there aren't two stars that come out of this class, if Dan Giddens, if his ceiling is slightly better, Amir Williams, and if the Austin Grandstaff's ceiling is, like, you know, 10 minutes a night chucking threes, then this team is really kind of hamstrung in their ability to improve for the next three seasons. I think that we're looking at people who are going to be playing at Ohio State for at least 3 years, but at least two guys from this group. Lyle may not stay 3 years, but everybody else probably will, and there should be at least two people here that become really, really good basketball players for Ohio State. Whether that happens this year or next year, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess moving back to more of a broader sense about this team, Ohio State's schedule, it very interesting this year. It seems to be, at least from my perspective, a little more challenging than it has been in the last couple of years. I know you guys over at Land Grant do a lot of great work with Ohio State scheduling, breaking news, reporting on it. How do you see this schedule, particularly the non-conference? I think most people kind of know what to expect out of Big Ten play, but particularly in the non-conference for Ohio State this year.
Yeah. We, for those of you who are listening, I broke the schedule when it released. That's can't do a ton of breaking news when you live in DC like I do, but we make a play for this one. It did surprise me a little bit in that this is a little bit harder than Ohio State typically does, and I expect next year's to also be really challenging. I know off the top of my head they're going to be playing a neutral site game with UCLA next season. They're hosting UConn. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a Gavitt game. I think they're going to probably pick up one more big one. But here, you know, I think they're going to play Virginia and Kentucky, and I think they're going to get crushed in both those games. Like Virginia especially, like that has the potential for Ohio State to score 30 points and lose by 16, but it feels like 40. And then there's two other ones here, and I really like they have to split them, and they might have to win them. We don't have to, but given that they're maybe close to 500 in Big Ten play, they really need to win both of them. And that is a November 27th neutral site matchup with Memphis. That's going to be played in Miami. And then December 12th, when they go to UConn. And both of those teams, I think, are going to be kind of tournament bubble-ish teams. Ohio State might have more raw talent than Memphis. I'll have to look a little bit more at UConn's roster. Those are both going to be really interesting. Ohio State can't afford to lose both of them and head into Big Ten play without really a kind of RPI top 60 quality win. The other interesting one is they're also playing Louisiana Tech early in the season. And I don't know if Ohio State's done the best job of gaining the RPI like they can, but that's a team that, even though they haven't been in the tournament, has played really well. I think they were like a Ken Pom top 60 team last year, and I know they lost their coach and they lost one of their better players, but that's kind of like the mid-major team that is going to give Ohio State a game. And Ohio State hasn't lost to one of those teams in several years, like maybe since the very beginning of the Thadmon era. When they got blown out by Butler before Butler was Butler. But if there's a paycheck game that could potentially beat Ohio State, that would be it. The other ones here, you know, VMI is interesting because VMI is going to try to score 200 points and Ohio State will score 300. But the other thing that kind of sucks if you're an Ohio State fan is that the Buckeyes are playing some like horrible teams. The worst team in college basketball will be Ohio State's second game. So there's a couple of on the high end, it's a little bit more interesting, but also some of the paycheck games are going to be even worse than they normally are.
Yeah, and I'm interested to get your perspective. I don't want to say a schedule makes a team because, you know, if you're a terrible team, you know, you can have the perfectly crafted schedule and it doesn't matter. But I am curious, do you think Ohio State kind of, it seems like the last couple of years they've scheduled like very good teams, but it's been like two games and then they've scheduled kind of, for lack of a better word, garbage outside of that. What do you think, first off, is that true? And second, do you think that kind of, is that the case this year, I guess I'm asking?
Yeah, so Ohio State's general philosophy under Thad Matta has been to play between three and four big name teams. One of them is going to be your ACC Big Ten game. They try to schedule at least one major Power Six caliber team on a neutral site, and they might get somebody else in a home and home. Sometimes you know you schedule those a year or two in advance, they don't work out. And then they had like Notre Dame as like their flagship game a year when the Irish like completely fell apart. And from there, you know, you want to get an in-state team or so, and then Yeah, then they usually do kind of fill things out with garbage. and sometimes they're filled out with garbage that advantageous to your RPI, and sometimes it's garbage because they'll come to Columbus and you end up playing Grambling. I don't have a huge problem with not playing, you know, eight big, you know, gigantic teams, especially now when, you know, there's like two people on Ohio State's basketball team that are old enough to drink. Because you're going to play so many other teams in the Big Ten where you might have only one game from the middle of, like the end of December through the rest of your season. You might only have one or two games from a team that's outside the RPI top 100. So I don't really buy the argument. Like, oh, you know, they're not challenged enough for Big Ten player. You're going to be challenged in the last 3.5 months of the year. All that I really care about is that you're getting at least one good home game for people who are season ticket holders, and that you're putting yourself in a position where you don't need to win 12 Big Ten games to make the tournament or get above like a 7 seed. And I, you know, it's always a little bit of a crapshoot because it's hard to predict which low major team is going to win 18 games and which one's not. But here, I don't have any complaints with it other than I wish they weren't playing two teams that were in like RPI bottom 300.
Yeah, it definitely, at least on paper, it looks more challenging. I know, you know, just to illustrate your point a little more, I know last year, I think Ohio State played Marquette early on, and yep. And you know, coming into the year, most people thought Marquette was going to be a NCAA tournament team, pretty quality opponent, and they just weren't. So yeah, just to illustrate, kind of, you know, you schedule a team, you think they're good, and you know, they're not, you know, to no fault of your own.
It's not like football where you're scheduling teams 8 years in advance, but for these home and home agreements, like that might still be done more than a year, and then you really can't adjust it. So you can kind of hedge for things with your RPI. You can try to play with your schedule, but it also depends on budgets. It depends on who can come in on what dates, and some of those things you can't control. I suspect Memphis might have been a little bit of a better team when they started those conversations than maybe where they project right now with some of their roster turnover too. So that's the game. The good news is even if they all kind of underachieve a little bit, Ohio State's still going to play Maryland. They're still going to play Indiana. They're still going to play Michigan and Michigan State and Purdue and Wisconsin. There's not going to be a lack of good basketball teams that will be on Ohio State's slate.
Oh yeah, and you know, not to get too off track here, but you know, I've been working through my previews, and I haven't got to Ohio State's schedule preview yet. But a lot of these lower teams, it's like 15 of 18 games are against like teams that made the NCAA tournament. And when I say 18, the Big Ten games are against teams that made the NCAA tournament last year, are in the top 25 this year, or are on the road. So it's just like, my gosh, like it's going to be a buzzsaw in Big Ten play. I assume Ohio State's is pretty similar, but definitely something to keep in mind, you know, when you're the non-conference might not be that interesting if you have so much waiting there for you.
It's a cliche. There's just not bad teams in this conference other than Rutgers. you know, Penn State and Nebraska may not be great. But they can beat you. I mean, Penn State's beaten Ohio State twice, I think, in the past two seasons. And now Penn State's recruiting really well. Everyone's got a good coach, so it's a flock.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of people, they're going to write off a team like Nebraska until you look, wow, they have – I think they have like four or five four-star type prospects on their team. You know, some of them are transfers, kind of unusual circumstances, but – you know, that might be a team that finishes near the bottom of the conference, and you're talking about that. So it's going to be a battle this year. But jumping back to Ohio State here real quick, just a couple more questions before we jump into our final predictions here. One of the things Thad Matta has kind of gotten, again, sort of a narrative, is that he doesn't like to go to the bench very often, or at least that's the theory. Do you think that's going to be the case this year, or will he be forced to go to the bench because of the youth and the inexperience?
That happened a little bit last season where they played a longer rotation than they typically do. And that was part of it because the team was so young and they didn't have the luxury of having lead starters. if he can get away with it, Mata would play a 7-man rotation and just leave the starters in there most of the game. And you know, that might frustrate some of us, but it has been successful. And right now, I don't think that they're going to have the team to do that. I would look for is a 10-man rotation in the beginning of the year when they're playing some of these bad teams. And then that's going to get tightened up. And I'm guessing that Austin Grandstaff falls out of that rotation. Dave Bell falls out of that rotation. Mickey Mitchell might fall out of that rotation. And then you're looking at 7-8 guys, you know, switching things up a little bit depending on matchups or who's kind of hot from downtown. And that's what they will likely be doing. Anything bigger than that would make me think that that's a sign that there's a problem with the starters and that they're just kind of, you know, throwing things out there and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see because I know, you know, I read an article a couple of years ago where I think generally the public kind of looks down on the fact that you play a short bench, but the statistical evidence was pretty compelling that that's actually effective for your team because you're putting the best players out there for longer.
If people are healthy, you know, you can get away with it. This is, college basketball is not like the San Antonio Spurs. You're not rolling out 37-year-olds with creaky knees. And I guess there's not really a reason to play Jaquan Lyle 38 minutes when you're playing against South Carolina State Tech Institute. But, you know, you do what you have to do to put your team in a position to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. You know, this year there's a lot of unknowns, so maybe this question isn't as good for Ohio State. But what do you think is going to be the most surprising thing about this team, or you know, unexpected, or at least something I guess the national media doesn't think is going to happen for the Buckeyes this year?
I think Ohio State is going to beat a top 10 team this year. They're going to get a couple of opportunities. They're going to get Virginia and Kentucky, who are going to be in there. Virginia is going to be at home. They're getting Maryland, I think, twice. They're going to get Indiana. I think they're going to be one of those teams. And I think I imagine it's going to happen at a point when people are a little bit more down on Ohio State. It might be a game or two after a particularly dispiriting performance, but eventually they're going to get hot from downtown. And Giddens is going to kind of grow up a little bit, and they're going to beat somebody that they shouldn't. And then that one big arc thing is going to help forgive some of their sins by losing to some of these kind of like 7 to 11 range in the conference, and that's going to be enough to get them into the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be that would definitely be big, especially if they can knock off a team like Virginia that looks like a legitimate Final Four contender. I guess why don't we jump into the meat of the podcast here, I guess, or everybody's favorite part, season predictions. How do you see things shaking out for Ohio State? Where do you see them fitting in the Big Ten? I think you kind of hinted at what postseason tournament you think they're going to make. What do you expect from Ohio State this year?
I expect a team that will have growing pains, talked about this a little bit here, one that will improve throughout the end of the season. I've seen OSU projected anywhere from like 6th to 9th. I think they're going to finish 7th, you know, behind Maryland, behind Indiana, behind the Michigan schools, behind Purdue, and probably behind Wisconsin. I think they'll finish out ahead of Iowa, and I think they'll still. I'm pretty down on Illinois. I think they'll beat them, and that will be enough to get them as one of like the last 6 or 7 teams in the tournament. Like maybe around the 10 seed, you know, kind of bubbling around with the first 4. And then they'll probably lose in the first weekend. But even if they don't make the NCAA tournament, even if they're a high seed NIT team, if this team is improved in March compared to where they were in January. And Ohio State sees some developments in the scoring potential of their wings, I would consider this season a success. It's a strange thing because I know a lot of fans are hungry for some bigger picture success after OSU's been kind of irrelevant for the last 2 seasons. But the struggles this year are going to be building to something. If this team does not improve, then there's some very difficult questions that are going to have to get answered by this Ohio State staff. And that might mean making a change from an assistant coach.
I think I'm generally kind of on a similar similar wavelength for Ohio State in the Big Ten. I had them around eighth. I'm not sure if you had. I have Iowa over them. I'm sure that's probably the one difference. Yeah, Michigan State, Maryland, Michigan, Purdue, Wisconsin. I kind of expect those teams to finish ahead of Ohio State. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be. I think it's going to be a dangerous team. There's a lot of talent. I just picture them right on the bubble. So it's just so tough to say whether they're going to get in or not, not knowing, you know, who they beat, who they don't beat. I think they'll get in, but it's just, at least for me, how I kind of see the Big Ten shaking out, it's just so hard to imagine, at least from my projections, of 8 Big Ten teams going to the tournament. That would just be unreal.
I think that'll happen too.
Yeah. It'll be, that would be incredible if they could send that many teams. But I think they're going to be on right on the bubble. It's just going to be, you know, as you were talking about, you know, with Virginia, Kentucky, two games with Maryland. You know, if they can knock off some of those top teams, and I guess, you know, for lack of the better term, the typical, you know, take care of business against, you know, Rutgers and Penn State and Nebraska, those type of teams. There's going to be a lot of dangerous games, but, you know, if Ohio State can do that, I definitely think they can make the tournament.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable goal. And this is a roster that can probably handle an injury or two better than some other ones here in the Big Ten, because there's so many young bodies and they're not depending on any one guy other than maybe Lyle to really kind of carry the offensive load. It should be interesting. I mean, I look at this conference, I think that there are at least 10 teams that can like be thinking we can make the tournament this year. Probably won't get all 10 of them in just because they're going to lose to each other and it would require some superlative performances in the non-con, or like Northwestern, where they're kind of screwed to begin with because they're playing some YMCA teams. But like, yeah, it'll be a war. And if Ohio State doesn't shoot themselves in the foot, they're going to be in a position to be in that conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing. You know, we talked about the non-conference schedule. You know, if they can beat Memphis, if they can beat UConn and avoid the upsets, that could set them up really well going into Big Ten play. But Matt, thanks for joining us. We appreciate all your insight on Ohio State. Any final thoughts on Ohio State, the Big Ten, college basketball in general, I guess, before you head out?
Yeah, my only other thought here for any other, I guess, OSU people who may be listening is I kind of have written this column the last 2 years, but I just wrote this for Land Grant. You should watch this team. It's worth getting emotionally invested in. It's worth paying attention to, even with Ohio State's football team doing so well right now, and even with kind of November, early December basketball being what it is. It's a blank slate, and these are the guys that you're going to be seeing here for the next couple of years. It's worth watching them grow and develop and do some potentially interesting things.
I guess one final prediction before you go. What do you see happening on the football field on Saturday night with Ohio State and Penn State?
I feel like 17 and a half points is too much. I actually hate Penn State more than I hate Michigan. I hope Ohio State just blows the doors off of it, but won't happen. I like the Buckeyes by 13, and I don't really see how Penn State scores enough points to beat the Buckeyes.
All right. Well, we'll see. You know, as I'm not sure too many people, they might be listening next week. So we'll see if they can take that one to the bank, I guess.
All right. Matt, I got one, again. Thanks for chatting with me.
Thanks for joining us. That was, that was Matt Brown from Land Grant Holy Land, SB Nation's Ohio State site. A lot of great coverage, both on football, basketball, and they've really expanded their coverage into Ohio State's other non-revenue sports, whatever the term you want to look for, you know, some of the smaller sports. So definitely check them out. It's going to be it'll be a fun season for Ohio State. I'm not sure it'll be the most successful, especially considering the high level of success they've seen over the last couple of years. But it definitely should be a path to growth, and it could be one of those things where this is the start of a special run. You know, if this recruiting class is what the experts say it's going to be. But again, thanks for joining us. I'm Thomas Bendit. You can follow me on Twitter at TBEINDIT. Check out all of our coverage at BT Powerhouse. The previews begin next week, so definitely check us out. And thanks for listening to our podcast.